Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. Today, John Truppen and I are... Oh, first of all, I'm Kate Pruser, managing editor of Lookout Landing. You probably know that by now. Today, John Truppen and I are joined by Craig Edwards, who you might know from his work at Fangraphs, and also he is the managing editor of Viva Alberto's SB Nation's Cardinals blog. Hello, Craig.
How are you guys doing?
Doing very You're good. Well. It's raining the first time in about 2.5 months in Seattle, and everyone's essentially acting like it's snowing. So, could be worse.
I mean, we had a pretty rainy spring and late entry to summer, so I feel like people shouldn't have forgotten the rain quite yet. Tell us about where you are and what you're doing, Craig.
I am in Chicago. It is sunny and about 70 right now. The weather is actually pretty perfect. It's kind of weird. I think August has been a bit cooler than you would normally expect. Usually, you know, you expect a bunch of, you know, high 80s and 90 degree weather, but that really hasn't been the case.
And how did you, just tell us a little bit about how you came to be where you are and what you're doing in Chicago in enemy territory.
Well, I grew up in Iowa. I was raised a Cardinals fan. Both of my parents grew up in Missouri, so all my extended family was Cardinals fans. And then I went to undergrad at Drake, which is in Des Moines where I grew up, and then went to law school in Iowa City at the University of Iowa, and moved to Chicago for work. And I've been here in Chicago now since 2006, and Cubs fans were more or less fine until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I bet. What was that like being in Chicago for what I imagine was just a week or two or perhaps a month of just debauchery and rioting in the streets? And I mean, it's just crazy.
I think most cities are generally better when, you know, their sports teams are good or, you know, have interest. It just brings a little bit more activity around. And I think Chicago's no different in that respect. I think that, you know, it's the playoffs were, you know, just crazy with it. The amount of people that were out and about. And I think that it did get a little nuts. And I think, you know, the hangover maybe is still in effect and will be. Hopefully, you know, it doesn't last as long as, you know, like, say, the 85 Bears has that's still going right now in Chicago. So I don't know if that's going to happen for the Cubs or not. But I think generally it makes the city a better place to live in, even if you have to deal with, you know, a few more obnoxious fans here and there.
I think John and I can maybe attest to that. So I moved back to Seattle right about the time where the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. So that was, I know a lot of people, many people cannot stand Seahawks fans, who are maybe similar to Cubs fans in that the city has suffered for a long time without a championship. And there was an understandable outpouring, I think, of excitement around it. But I know that people around the league get very frustrated about Seahawks fans, although it was super fun to be here. Something we've been wanting to have for the Mariners for quite a while and just have not.
No, not much of a legacy of success recently for us. But a number of moves recently that, while not necessarily aggressively advancing that, certainly have been interesting. And obviously yesterday was sort of the fresh in our minds move, trading for Mike Leake, and in exchange essentially giving up a middle infielder who we have affinity for in Raider Escanio, but who's not a major prospect. Craig, what was the Cardinals, I guess, fan base perspective on Mike Leake? Like, was he a player that people were sad to see go, or were the Cardinals were people essentially kind of done with Mike Leake?
I think that I would characterize both the signing and the trade of Mike Leake is with sort of mild annoyance. when they signed him, it was after they, you know, failed in their pursuits to sign David Price. So it's like, I mean, when you're going from, oh, hey, maybe we're going to get David Price, to, oh, the Cardinals just signed Mike Leake, you're just like, well, you know, you're
womp womp.
you just committed, you know, 5 years and $80 million to a guy who's average. And, you know, at the time they were, you know, wanting to make sure that they, you know, sort of filled up the innings gap that they potentially had with Lance Lynn, missed 2016 with Tommy John surgery, John Lackey was a free agent, and so they wanted to make sure that they sort of filled in the gaps before some of the younger guys were ready to step up. And, you know, he more or less did that last year. I think the Cardinals' defense was pretty shoddy in 2016, and that hurts Leake a bit because the ball, you know, goes in play so much. But I think that this year he got off to a great start, and that sort of maybe set some unreasonable expectations. And he's a guy who, over the course of his career, you know, he's worn down a bit as the season goes on. It's weird, you know, people pay attention to pitch counts so much, and Mike Leake is a guy who, you know, he'll be through five innings and have 75 pitches, and you think, oh, maybe we're going to get two more innings out of him, but, like, really, you know, you should probably just take him out right then if you, you know, you'd just go straight to the bullpen, because it just, you don't pay attention with pitch counts. It's that, you know, I think that the third time through the order penalty is big with him. But, you know, if you're looking for a guy who can give you 30 starts for five or six innings and be about average, you know, that's about what he's done. He's struggled over the last month or so, you know, maybe had trouble locating some of his off-speed pitches, getting up in the zone. I don't know if that's due to maybe a little bit of fatigue, maybe, you know, getting a few more days of extra rest at some point might have helped him. But I think that, you know, you more or less know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who's not going to strike out a lot of guys. He's not going to walk a lot of guys. Gets the ball on the ground when things are going well. And all that tends to even out over the course of the season to get you an average starting pitcher. So I think that them trading him now and also picking up so much of the money is sort of an annoying situation, because it's like, why did you sign him in the first place if after a year and a half you were going to dump him and pay $17 million of his contract? So, I mean, they paid $42 million for, you know, a year and three quarters of Mike Leake, which I guess is the market rate, but, you know, I mean, whoa. That's, yeah. You know, that's, it's not,
be a
it's,
pitcher, it's kids.
Not, it's not a good feeling, you know, and so, on the positive side, it also means that the Cardinals are confident in some of their younger pitchers stepping up, and it does clear a little bit of money so that they can hopefully make some sort of bigger move, hopefully on the position player side at some point, if not today, you know, in the off season, to sort of get themselves out of this hole that they have, where it seems like they've got a bunch of average players and no stars.
Yeah, I saw a lot of Cardinals fans saying, "We're getting Stanton."
Which, yeah, well, you know.
Maybe.
A lot of dominoes, I think, have to fall in order to put that in place. But I think that that's the type of guy that the Cardinals sort of need to go after. I think that it might have been more reasonable to go after him 2 months ago before he, you know, put on the show of shows and made it, you know, a little bit less reasonable and made it a little harder for the Marlins to trade him. But, you know, a guy like Stanton, the Cardinals, they should have money, you know, that would make a move like that, or, you know, a trade for some other, you know, big contract, big money player. They've got, you know, they've got the farm system, they've got the money that they should be making things happen, and I think people are sort of waiting for that. And over the past couple of years, the the fans have been a little bit spoiled, perhaps, but you know, the low 80s win season, you know, isn't cutting it for a lot of people, and for a team that, you know, draws so well, and you know, it's a bit unfortunate that people are turning on them so quickly, but at the same time, they need to sort of make things happen to get people a little bit more invested for next season.
Well, it is it's a great thing to be able to say we're gonna pay Mike Leake this money to basically be a placeholder until our young arms, you know, Flaherty and Hudson and Weaver, until those guys are ready. And then, really, because they're so young and cheap and homegrown, I mean, this is what you can do when you are able to grow your own pitching talent, which is something the Mariners have really struggled with over the years, obviously, because years and years of Jack Zarednik, who, pitching, what pitching? Let's just get all the big right-handed power arms, power bats. So it's a luxury that I, as a Mariners fan, cannot comprehend, to be able to look to our AA squad or our AAA team and say, oh, well, we can allocate this amount of money to these guys because we have 5-6 guys who it looks like are going to work out, and then you just have to wait enough time to see which of those guys are going to really pan out. But you're almost guaranteed at least 2 of them, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of people made take for granted a little bit the Cardinals' ability to produce average players, whether it's pitchers or whether it's, you know, outfielders, infielders, whatever. It seems like they have no problem bringing somebody up who can give them average production, and I think that's a real talent for an organization. Because I don't think you necessarily realize, oh, hey, you know, if the Chicago White Sox had, you know, 3 or 4 more average players, they wouldn't have needed to sell everybody because they'd be contending in the playoffs. But they had, you know, black holes at, like, you know, 4 or 5 different spots. And if they had just average production, then they'd do great. And I think that, you know,
yeah,
the Cardinals...
Some opinions on how the White Sox are developing their players and what they're going to do to this huge crop of prospects that they just got, because it doesn't help if you can't develop them.
Yeah, and you know, it's a situation where the Cardinals have been pretty blessed to find those average guys, but they've had a lot of difficulty finding a star, and you know, they keep, you know, sort of hoping that one of the average guys develops into a star, but that just hasn't been the case for them, and they've done really well with pitching. You know, Luke Weaver has come up and done better than most people have expected him to do, I think, and Jack Flaherty is maybe not a well-known name, but he's a guy who didn't pitch a lot in high school and, you know, has worked his way up really quickly through the minor league system and appears to be major league ready.
This is where I stop and sing my praises of Jack Flaherty, who I saw in the Perfect Game All-American Classic. And I was like, who is that kid? Like, I love him on just a personal level. Like, what a great guy. And then he is my favorite prospect in baseball.
I'm so jealous of you. Sort of general profiling of, you know, during the trade deadline period, Craig, we were looking at who can the Mariners trade for, because we have so little to give up. You know, we essentially had Tyler O'Neill, and that's about it. DePoto has shown a tendency to look for these AAA guys who he thinks he can maximize on. So Kate did a profile of, you know, looking at Weaver and Flaherty and Marco Gonzalez and a few other people in the Cardinals organization. What, I guess, are there... Is there a feeling that in that trade, the O'Neill for Gonzalez trade, that you guys sort of really got something you needed there? Because the Mariners, obviously, Gonzalez has not been good this year for us. But you know, you mentioned when you were describing Mike Leake as, like, he's a guy who can go 5 to 6 innings for you. We don't have really anyone who can do that on the active roster at the moment, besides maybe Erasmo Ramirez, who was not a starting pitcher at the start of this year. So, that sounds pretty good, I think, to most Mariners fans. What was the sense on the Gonzalez O'Neill trade there?
I think it was pretty universally praised on the Cardinals' end. Gonzalez, he was a guy who, 3 years ago made the major leagues in less than a year after getting drafted, and then in the playoffs he came in as a reliever and, maybe was working on like a third pitch. He was your typical lefty, low, not high velocity fastball, good changeup, and in the playoffs it looked like maybe he had this slider that was going to be a third pitch and make him a really effective starter. And then, injuries have sort of started and stopped him from really keeping that run going over the last few years. And it came to a point where, hey, he's finally, back healthy and pitching in AAA, and he got called up for one game, I think, this year for the Cardinals. And, it seemed like his value probably wasn't going to get any higher, and he was going to be out of options, I think, next year. And the fact is, he had just been passed by guys like Weaver, guys like Flaherty, obviously Alex Reyes last year. And it was a situation where he didn't really have a future with the Cardinals as a starting pitcher. He was maybe going to go into the bullpen next year. But if you were going to be able to find a team that maybe saw him as a starter, then that's something that you have to jump on. And to get a guy who's, maybe a top 100-ish prospect like O'Neill, I think that was viewed as a very good trade for the Cardinals. And the Cardinals don't necessarily have a lack of outfielders right now, but in terms of value, it's kind of hard to beat, especially just with that power. You take some chances on guys who have that power, and you hope that maybe they can develop everything else enough to where you can have sort of a transformational player, but the most likely outcome is maybe a Randall Grichuk type. But I think overall the view is definitely favorable.
Yeah, I mean, it was not met with universal acclaim on this side, obviously. I think maybe the trade for Mariners fans was viewed more as, well, this sucks, but this is something we have to do because we literally do not have any pitchers who are healthy right now. Like, we just, at that point especially, needed people who could throw baseballs. And I think a lot of the appeal with Gonzalez, like you said, is, well, maybe his development got sidetracked a little. He's working on that third pitch, and then he had to kind of abandon it. Now it seems like he's introducing a curveball more, which looks to be, and John, you obviously are better at this stuff than I am, but the curveball looks like it can be a major league quality pitch. It's got some nice bite to it. He seems to be able to locate it for strikes. It's a pitch he was working on in college, though, that he basically had to abandon while he was working through the Cardinals system. So, it's raw, as is, I think, his ability to be a starter, coming back from TJ, coming back from the shoulder injury. I still see a lot of potential with Gonzalez, but the sadness about trading Tyler O'Neill is very real. It's tough to get over the videos
of moonshot home runs, which Tyler O'Neill is quite capable of supplying.
Yeah.
I think the advantage a guy like Gonzalez has is that he's a really good athlete. So I think that if you can keep him healthy for a while, he should be able to get a new pitch going, have the repeatability of the delivery, that sort of thing. Because I know it's been a long time, but at Gonzaga he was a two-way player and he was a decent hitter, and that sort of stuff tends to carry over at some point in the big league level to help you work out of some sort of issues. And as far as O'Neill goes, I mean, it seemed like he had a lot of struggles early on in the season, and it was a situation where he might have been, stock was maybe down a little bit in the industry. I don't know if the Mariners were down on him, but it seemed like he was turning things around right at the point where he was traded.
I believe one of the major controversies of the last couple weeks is that the Mariners refused to let Gonzalez swing in two different at-bats that he had when they were playing at Atlanta and had him bunt twice. Especially after having Andrew Albers hit an RBI single and
Rivera's
have two hits, I think. It was like our pitchers had more offensive production.
Erasmo Rivera,
the one who actually probably was a decent enough hitter or relative to any of them was, nope, you're bunting twice.
Mike Leake is actually also, I mean, he's not terrible.
Can he play
with
for,
the bat?
Yeah.
he's another good athlete type player. He's like 5'9". I don't know.
The Mariners might have the shortest.
He's the prototypical first baseman.
Now think about it. It's like Marco Gonzalez is maybe 6 foot. Erasmo's pitching like 5'10". I mean, he's listed. Tiny. He's tiny, but he's listed as 5'8". Like
5'8".
And like Andrew.
He's so small.
No, please.
Trade for Stroman.
Yeah.
If we can get Andrew Moore back in, we would have
his arms out, patting.
We would have no one over 6 foot except Paxton.
On either side.
Yeah, it was always funny watching photos with, it'd be like Adam Wainwright, Michael Wacha, and then Mike Leake.
It's surprising to me. I mean,
it's like watching a little brother trail around.
Often. We saw him when he was with Houston, right? San Francisco for a little bit, but maybe it's just the hair.
San Francisco.
It makes him seem like he's taller, or at least it distracts you, but. Yeah, he is not tall now. I'm looking actually at some of these photos. He is a very small little guy. Oh.
That leads me to one of the questions that we got on Twitter that I thought was pretty funny. PNV at Vagabond PNW wants to know if there's any chance that next year at some point the M's rotation is four former Cardinals prospects and James Paxton.
So we've got Marco Gonzalez.
It has been,
Mike Leake,
strongly
you,
bandied
you
about
signing
and
Lance
something.
Lynn.
Oh yeah, especially because he seemed to be pretty mad, right? He was mad about.
Well, I think, I mean, it goes back like a month or so. So, I mean, in July, when the Cardinals were, maybe in, maybe out in terms of making a run, he would get asked after every start about, if he felt like this was his last start with the Cardinals, et cetera, et cetera. And, I think after his final start before the deadline, he's like, we're four games out. I'm not getting traded. And he didn't get traded, and and then all of a sudden the Cardinals went on an 8-game run to get back in it, and now they're a little bit out of it. And I think that you're going to get that sense from almost all veteran players where if you're in a race and the team doesn't add anything, I think there's going to be a little bit of resentment there because they're out there, they were working hard trying to get in a winner, and then when you see the Cubs add Jose Quintana, and the Brewers added Neil Walker and Anthony Swarzak, and the Cardinals are like, nope, we're good. When things were definitely not good, I think that the players are maybe a little upset that they're not making things happen a little bit more, and with Rosenthal going down, that really hurt the bullpen over the last few weeks. But I think that that from a player perspective, you know, even if on paper it seems like, oh, Jack Flaherty's going into the rotation, maybe Wainwright comes back, you know, they're not necessarily that much worse off as a team between Leak or, you know, Weaver and Flaherty or whoever. From a perspective standpoint, it's not a great look.
Sure.
When you're sending a message to the team that, hey, we believe in you guys.
Then all you need is James Paxton, Marco Gonzalez, Mike Leak, Lance Lynn, and Sam Gavilio, and you do have that that magic quintet.
That's right.
Go on, Kate. I cut you off.
There it is. Oh, sweet baby Sam. Somebody pointed out too in the comments, I think, that it's kind of a reflection on players like Lynn that they look around. They don't look down, right? They look around. So they see other teams doing these things, making these moves, bringing in these impact guys. They see other guys who are quote-unquote at their level. And not, I think... I don't know that that's the best way to look at things, because you should be able to look down and look into your farm system as a player, I think, and know like who's there and be able to support those guys and support them when they come up, which just seems like that's not my favorite attitude. I think that a guy has to be an MLB player to be, because that kind of feeds into that idea too of like rookie hazing and all of that. And you know, just, and I know from having been in Tacoma, where when the Memphis Redbirds came to play, they have an iPad stuck to the door of the clubhouse, and each player coming in for their day has to sign in and answer a series of questions, kind of like
Sonoma Stompers.
In that Ben Lindbergh. It's only
the only rule is it has
to
work.
What I'm talking about. Yeah, it only has to work, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Yes, that one. So they kind of adapted the idea from that, where players have to sign in and say, how are you feeling today? How are you feeling physically? How are you feeling mentally? Do you feel like you're going to have a good... So like this series of questions. So I think attending to that mental skills side, or attending to like the whole player rather than just the physical player. So I don't know. That attitude seems a little at odds with what I feel like the Cardinals might be trying to do in the organization, the Cardinals way, whatever. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts on how the Cardinals develop people. But...
Well, I think, you know, speaking to Lynn specifically, you know, he was also upset because when they traded away Leak, you know, the questions he was getting was, now do you think this makes it more likely for the Cardinals to sign you? And his response was, they haven't talked to me. And so I think that part of it was more of a personal question to Lance Lynn, because, you know, he probably feels like he's earned, you know, some sort of discussions about a long-term contract, and the Cardinals have basically said, you know, at the end of this year, you're gone. As far as, you know, how they're developing players, I think it's that, you know, the Cardinals way, or whatever you want to call it, is sort of I don't know, it's a bit of a misnomer as far as like doing things the right way, and it's more of the Cardinals want to make sure that whatever they're learning in, you know, Jupiter and extended spring training is the same stuff that they're going to be learning, you know, when they, you know, get promoted to Peoria, High A, and Palm Beach. They want to make sure that there's some consistency throughout the levels to make sure that they're, you know, going through things and not being told one thing by, you know, one manager and another thing by another guy. And one thing that they do place an emphasis on, and, you know, I have no idea whether or not this is important, but they think it's important that players you know, win some in the minor leagues and are part of, you know, a playoff push, or and they think that that helps you know, sort of prepare them a little bit for the pressures of when you have to do it in the big leagues. And I don't know that that's something that actually does help, but I know it's something that they do and they believe in. And they've got a tricky situation because they've got a lot of young players who are more or less ready for the big leagues, but they're maybe not good enough to push the guys out who are currently taking those roles. You know, they've called up Carson Kelly, who's, you know, one of the best catching prospects in baseball, but he's sitting behind Yadier Molina, who has a 3-year contract extension. And so is it better for his development to get at-bats in Memphis every day, or is it better for him to sit on the bench in St. Louis? And I don't know that I have the right answer for that, but I feel like it's probably better for him to play a little bit more. But and then maybe get that major league experience in September. But I think that, you know, in general, I think the player development, you know, system works to the extent of, you know, they identify guys who they feel will work their way up through the system, and for the most part, it works out for them.
That's interesting, because that's very similar to some of the things that DePoto has brought in to the Mariners this past couple years. The emphasis on winning in the minors is definitely something that was a big push last year. It resulted in,
I think
every team going to the playoffs.
Or at least every team had a winning record.
John, do you know, is that right?
Almost every team went to the playoffs. But, yes.
So, that's right. And we had the Southern League champions in the Jackson Generals, which was that team that had Andrew Moore and Tyler O'Neill and a few other guys on it. Dan Altavilla was there for a while. Edwin Diaz was there for a while. Guillermo Heredia was there for a while. And that, I think, Tyler O'Neill's performance in that league really put him on the map. And then he went to the Arizona Fall League, and he was kind of a star at the Fall League. He was, in fact, an all-star. And that really just gave him a lot of helium, which I think is why people, despite his, like, sort of lackluster performance this year in AAA, which he still is super young for the level, but people, that kind of impacted why people were so sad to see him go, because he was one of the very few, like, legit stars that we had.
The point, I guess, and the only one to counterbalance that, you know, the discussion of, like, having everything in the same way at each level, you know, people being taught the same stuff. We've reiterated this a few times, but you know, what we've heard from people who were part of the organization during the Jaxie era, and, you know, players' families, you know, people who were outside of the organization, was, you know, players would get one type of instruction at one level and get another opposite type of instruction at another level. You know, that's what happened to Mike Zunino. You know, that's what happened to Dustin Ackley, you know, and that's also what happens that then you miss, you know, guys like Justin Smoke, where, you know, they have the physical skill set, but they're not being, you know, they're not being coached in such a way that they can, you know, unlock that potential.
Yeah, the big joke about Mariners players is they always get better when they leave, which is, you know, it's a little bit of a false canard, but to this, there is some meaning to it, in that there was a way that players were being developed that wasn't as effective, and now, to a man, every person we talk to, when you say, what's been the biggest change in the organization, they say, communication, everything is the same, which seems like such a simple thing. Get all of your guys on message. How hard is that? But apparently it was a challenge. So I don't think we'll see the effects from that. Obviously, the Cardinals have been doing this for years, right? So we're not going to see these effects immediately. But I think in a few years, we're going to start reaping the benefits of guys who have had one consistent form of instruction. I mean, now the question is this the best form of instruction? But just having everyone kind of on the same page is tremendously helpful.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals, the, you know, whatever the joke is right now is that, you know, they struggle. They come up from AAA and they have success in the majors, and then they start to struggle. And so they send them back down to AAA to get them fixed, and then they come back up and then they do well again. And, you know, people are wondering what instruction is going on at the major league level to where they get up and then they stall. And that's happened with Colton Wong and Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty. Aledmys Diaz is still down in the minors. And these are all guys that came up. And, you know, it's not like they put up a run of 2 weeks where, you know, they just hit a few homers and everyone was like, oh, he's, you know, our next great player or something. It's guys who came up and for half a season or a full season or more were hitting well. And for whatever reason, at the first sign of struggles, that they would get benched and then find themselves in the minor leagues again. And, you know, it's not, no matter how well run, you know, your organization is, there's going to be holes and there's going to be issues that you don't plan for and can't really necessarily correct in one season. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of trial and error to figure out what works best.
One of the questions that we have, it kind of related to this, is are the Cardinals fans the best fans in baseball? Please answer in haiku. You do not have to answer in haiku. That question came from C. from Bothell, our friend Chris, who always wants to make people answer in haiku. But sort of related to that idea of, I think that a lot of Cardinals fans have justified pride in the organization because of the Cardinals way and because there's this great emphasis on growing their own players. I mean, it's something you can really be proud of, which, again, I can only look from the outside and imagine how great that must be. But do you think that that's kind of correlated to that feeling of best fans in baseball? Where does that come from? What's your take on that?
You know, I think that it, like a lot of things, it's sort of, you know, media and player created. And then at some point in time, you know, when it you know, you hear it over and over and over again, and you know, have a decent amount of success, it sort of gets flipped on its end. You know, I don't think Cardinals fans have been going around for decades, you know, flaunting the fact that, you know, people were calling them the best fans in baseball. But if enough people start saying, oh, hey, you know, St. Louis is the best, they have the best fans, then you're going to start to take a little bit of pride in that. And, you know, it can be fun to sort of knock that down a little bit, you know, when, you know, fans do things that aren't necessarily representative of what you would hope that a fan base was doing. And I think it's a similar situation where, you know, all of a sudden, because this has been created, then it comes back against the fan base when they're not necessarily the ones that started it. You know, people, I think it's a similar situation with, so whether or not you think Yadier Molina is a future Hall of Famer. You know, you hear guys say, oh, well, Cardinals fans are going to be mad about this, but I don't think that he's a Hall of Famer, when, you know, all sorts of respected baseball people, whether it's, you know, Buster Olney, Ken Rosenthal, Jonah Carey, whoever, are saying, oh, we think that Yadier Molina is a future Hall of Famer. And so that view goes to the fans. The fans pick up that view, and then people get mad at the fans for having that view. And, you know, they sort of
You're welcome to swear.
I don't know.
I don't know if you've watched. Yeah, we're a Mariners podcast.
They get crapped on.
You can definitely swear. You're allowed to. We're a Mariners podcast.
I believe the slogan for the season was hashtag fuck this for about 3 months.
Yeah, we broke the seal on that a long time ago.
Anyway, go on.
Well, yeah, they. Mm-hmm. No, so I think that you know, the more attention you receive, the more likely people aren't going to like it, and you're going to find more of the sort of the poor representations are going to get called out. And I think that St. Louis has been perhaps uniquely called out by, you know, certain Twitter accounts and that sort of thing over the past few years, whereas other fan bases, they don't have that happening to them in the same way. And so I think that people resent that a little bit, although, you know, at some point it comes with the territory. When, you know, you get that much exposure, it's just going to happen.
And like I said, I mean, it's similar to what we've had with the 12s, to the point where even our own fan base has become kind of divided between Seahawks fans and 12s. And if you're a 12, then you're like looked down upon, or there are maybe certain assumptions made about your fandom that I don't know are always entirely fair or just, but sometimes are, because sometimes, you know, when you have a group of fans, there's always going to be a group of fans in your fan base who are all capsy, to put it nicely. You know, they're very maybe don't always think through things, maybe aren't as thoughtful as some of us would wish they be. But I think that that's a really good point, that you can't just let that feed that small and selfish and kind of amoral place, because there's a lot about rooting for sports teams that is amoral, because you are hoping for your team, you're hoping for other people's failure, right? It is in itself, the act of sports fandom is kind of a, you know, it's being a jerk. I think Meg Rowley wrote a great thing once about being a jerk, and how that's built into your fandom.
Yeah, I mean, it would have felt really good if Aroldis Chapman had blown that World Series game and the Cubs had lost. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it would have felt really good.
Well, see, I liked Mike Montgomery. I have been a big Mike Montgomery fan all along, so I got the perfect ideal outcome. My moral compass was very satisfied that night. Another question that we got for you from Chris is, do you miss Albert Pujols?
You know, I don't miss his production that he's giving the Angels right now. I miss the production that he was giving the Cardinals for, you know, 2001 to 2011. You know, I went back and tried to sort of figure out, you know, what the Cardinals might look like now if they had signed him to, you know, I think they offered not as much as the Angels offered, probably, you know, like 9 years and maybe like $210 million or something like that. If how the Cardinals would look differently now, and, you know, it's not that different, but at the same time, if he were in his, you know, 17th year with the Cardinals and playing first base every day, you know, and you still don't have the DH in the National League, it's a tough situation. I think that it's always nice to say, oh, you know, wouldn't it be great if Albert Pujols played 20 years? They were all with the Cardinals, and it, you know, it's him, Stan Musial, and Bob Gibson, and, you know, like that sort of nostalgic, you know, view feels really nice. But, you know, I think ultimately you'd rather have your team make good decisions. And, you know, it's looking like offering $9 million and, you know, $210 million or 9 years and $210 million, you know, wasn't probably a very good decision. And the Angels, you know, saved the Cardinals in that sense. You know, all that said, I don't know that competitively the Cardinals would be doing a lot differently if they still had Albert Pujols. You know, one of the things that the Angels did was they backloaded the contract. And so it makes his $114 million or whatever that he's still owed look so much worse, because they're only paying him like $15 million in his first year or something like that. So, I mean, I guess the short answer is yes. I miss Albert Pujols, but at the same time, I'm fine with his decision to not be playing for the Cardinals right now.
Well, if you read 538 yesterday, you would have read that Albert Pujols is the worst player in baseball by a lot.
On the other end of that, I guess I know Tommy Pham has had.
So maybe that would make you feel even better.
Barely heard of Tommy Pham. An extraordinary breakout season. Has that been sort of the most fun piece of this year, or you know, what's been the most fun part of watching this season, even as the Cardinals are sort of still hanging around in playoff contention, but sort of you know, not quite as much locked into it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tommy Pham's emergence has been great. I mean, I don't think that, you know, there's much reason for people to have heard about him before this year, but he was this is like his 12th year, I think, in the Cardinals organization. He was drafted out of high school in Las Vegas, and he always had a ton of talent. He always, you know, generally performed well, but he couldn't stay on the field. And, you know, I think last year he was in the opening day lineup, and he strained his hamstring, I think, running to first on his very first at bat. And that's sort of been the story of Tommy Pham before this year. And then, you know, the broadcast mentions it, I think, every single night, but that he has an eye condition, and he's, I think, you know, legally blind in one eye, and he has to have special contacts, and he's had to go through, you know, however many eye doctors just to be able to, you know, see correctly. And for a baseball player, that's obviously a pretty important thing to be able to do. And when he's not had the right contacts, you know, he's struck out like 40% of the time, and it's like, oh, well, he's not very good. But then he gets the right contacts, and you know, things turn around for him. I don't know that he's necessarily the 5-win player or 6 or 7-win player like he's almost playing, you know, on a rate basis. But you know, whatever the Cardinals situation is next year, he's earned, you know, a spot in the everyday lineup. And you know, right now he's probably a better center fielder defensively than Dexter Fowler is, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to change too much now. But it's definitely been very exciting to see what he's done so far this year. I think the first couple months where Carlos Martinez was, you know, pitching like one of the, you know, best five, you know, pitchers in baseball was really fun. He's come back down a little bit, but you know, as far as the most exciting thing, it's definitely Tommy Pham, because you know, the team, it's, you know, they should be better than they are, and it's been disappointing to see them sort of underachieve you know, what both expectations were, and both, you know, the individual performances, you know, should produce better than a 500 record right now, and they just haven't.
Well, maybe we can kind of wrap up with this question, because
is it about the Brendan Ryan trade?
No, but I mean, if you want to go on about that for a while, our listeners love hearing about Brendan Ryan. So
Michael Clato just worked out, you know, so well for the Cardinals.
There cannot be enough
it's very
Brendan
possible.
Ryan content
Kate,
on the podcast.
Kate, you are a Raiders.
Well, the Cardinals just
Raiders
traded for the next Brendan Ryan.
Fairly upset.
For Mike Leake, I think. So, watch out.
Yeah, I mean, I was sad. Personality-wise, he's a doll. He was a lot of fun in Clinton, which is not a fun place. Not generally a fun team. The Lumber Kings are pretty consistently one of our worst in the system. And after a late innings win, he snatched the flag away from the mascot and ran with it like in a victory lap around the stadium. I'll find you, Craig, the gif of him doing it. It's pretty great. But no, Escanio is the bat isn't there, but he's probably the best defensive shortstop that we had in the system.
Supposedly. Something.
Yes,
but
I think that's right.
Yes.
Lewis Boyd, who we just drafted this year from ASU, is pretty good. But Ascanio. Yeah, we have little guys like who are way, way far away, but Ascanio was kind of the only one who was playing above the A level, who you know, was a little bit on the radar.
It's such a grim system.
I don't get
that's
it.
It's such a crim system. Somebody
yes,
where the bat might develop.
Crim system sounds like a first base prospect.
Crim system.
Yeah.
He's a D2
Congratulations.
Kid. Yeah, actually, Craig, just by having this conversation with us, you are now on the Mariners' top 30.
Congratulations.
Prospect list. Yes. Enjoy. The beat writers will be showing up at your house any minute. Yeah, so you understand why there was such a huge pushback against getting rid of Tyler O'Neill. Because it's a thin enough system that I knew who Raider Ascanio was and was sad about him going away. Not very sad, because Mike Leake is, you know, going to be much better for the team in the short run and probably the long run, but when you look at Tyler O'Neill's home runs, and then, you know, he's being pretty successful with Memphis right now, although his walk rate has just cratered. You understand why there was a lot of pushback, but it seems like Cardinals fans are embracing him.
Oh yeah, I mean, people are happy to have him, and you know, it's one of those things where they've got a lot of outfielders, and I think that they're hoping that somebody, you know, sort of emerges into a star, and if you've got potential 40 homer power, it's hard to look away from that.
Yeah, jerk.
Well, you know, he's Canadian, right? So
that's exactly why I think he was so excited to wear red. I think Tyler was a little sad to be traded away from the Mariners, because they'd invested a lot of time with him. He'd been at the fan fest, like, you know, it's always hard, I think, the first time you get traded. I've heard guys say that. And I think that there's something about the power tool, like, specifically when you... John and I were talking about this with speed, and how speed is a sample size of one. Like, you just need to look at a guy once and you can say, oh, he's fast. That's a major league skill.
Yeah.
I think you only need to watch Tyler O'Neill hit one home run and you're like, oh, I could see him doing that. It's a very easy skill to fall in love with, is what I'm saying. No, my actual question, final question, before you distracted me with thoughts of Brendan Ryan and Buffaloes, is the Mariners are kind of in a bad place right now. We're literally watching our playoff hopes trickle away day by day. So I would like to focus on the Cardinals instead. Where do you think the Cardinals end up?
This year?
Yeah.
You know, probably somewhere around that 82 to 85 win range, and likely a game behind the Rockies or the Brewers for that final wild card spot. I think that they've been too inconsistent to really say that, you know, we're going to count on another really good run here. I mean, there's only a month left and they've got at least 5 games to make up, and that's really, really hard to do. I think that it's something they still could do, but if you're looking at most likely outcomes, I think you're probably talking about you know, a team that's a little bit above 500 but short of the playoffs, which is, you know, exactly what they were last year.
The Rockies have been cratering so hard, though. Like, they are, I think, maybe one of the worst offensive teams in baseball over the past month.
Bad.
And Carlos Gonzalez is the worst offensive player not named Albert Pujols, I believe. I check myself on that. But anyway,
pretty sure it's Gonzalez Escobar, but...
Carlos Gonzalez hasn't been good, though. He was really contributing a ton to their offense. They are bottoming out a little bit, it feels like. You don't think that the Cardinals, with the addition of Weaver, Flaherty, maybe have a chance to take a run at them?
I mean, I think they definitely have a chance to. I think that of, you know, if you look at it on a talent level basis, you know, you're going to look at the Dodgers and Cubs and Nationals and see that those three are clearly the top teams. But I think that there's a pretty good argument that, at least talent-wise, the Cardinals are the fourth best team. And they haven't really shown that this year. And they definitely have a chance to catch the Rockies. It's just, you know, it's... But if the Rockies go, you know, 15-15, the Cardinals have to go, like, 21-10. And that's not something that the Cardinals have shown that they can do. The next eight games are against the Giants and the Padres. I mean, that seems like a pretty good time to start a run if they can get themselves in good position. But if I were, you know, betting, I wouldn't bet on the Cardinals to make the playoffs. That said, you know, obviously that's what I'm hoping for.
So ultimately, after making all these trades with each other, the Mariners and the Cardinals will probably end up in a similar place. I think the Mariners, too, will end up maybe slightly over 500, missing out on the second wild card by a game or two, and it'll be similarly frustrating for both of us, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, if they can get above 500, that might do it, you know?
Yeah, that's how bad the AL wild card race is.
Or, you know,
at least get a few
one-game playoffs, you know, just, you know, make sure that the wild card game can't actually start until, like, Friday of the postseason, I think would be pretty ideal just from a general fan interest perspective.
Yeah, I think we are all rooting for the most chaotic outcome possible, regardless of team loyalties. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Greg. We really appreciate the insight, and we hope you enjoy your shiny new Tyler O'Neill.
Adequate is enough.
And we'll, you know, get what we can out of this here Mike Leak.
I'm sure he'll be very adequate.
that he is now our ace. All right. Well, thank you so much, and thank you to everyone who sent in questions, and we will talk to you all next week.